Welcome to ACB Radio's Main Menu Live. Opinions expressed during the show do not reflect the views of ACB Radio or the American Council of the Blind, its members, employees, or board of directors. If you would like to participate in the live show at 2 hours Universal on Wednesdays, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Main Menu Live. This is actually episode number 300 for Main Menu, and wow, what an accomplishment. We've had Jonathan Mosen here, and Dave Williams, and me, and Daryl, and a bunch of other people, and it's a great milestone here on ACB Radio Mainstream, Main Menu episode number 300. Tonight on Main Menu Live, we'll be hearing from President and CEO of Saratech Corporation, all about some new technologies that they've come out with called RIM and RAM. But before we get into all of that, let's bring on my co-host, Daryl Shandro. Hello, Daryl. How's it going?
Good evening. It's going great, and it sure has been an interesting day.
Oh, indeed it has, hasn't it? Wow. Well, let's start with something simple, shall we?
Okay.
And Winamp version 5.35 is out. And mainly this is simply just a bug fix release. It doesn't look like there's any sort of accessibility improvements or anything like that in the release. But you might want to go ahead and get it. I saw it first today on Beta News. Now the next
there is a reference in the release notes about fixing some tabbing issues in the user interface, so that may be accessibility related. We just don't know yet.
Yeah, that's very interesting because those were also in the 5.34 release notes as well. And if you look at the release notes on Beta News, because they put when they post these, they actually post the changes, you know, up there when they post the new releases. And it only had two things listed, and both of those were DLL type, you know, error issues, and nothing referenced at all to accessibility. But that doesn't mean they left them out either. So, yeah, it's worth checking out. Install it. I know that there have been some issues with the Winamp library for a number of users, and hey, it will be interesting to see if anyone reports that it's working better.
Indeed.
All right, you want to talk about the Humanware announcement today?
Okay, so it looks like yesterday Humanware was acquired by Jolimont Capital out of Australia. There was a sale of shares in the company, and 90% of the shareholders voted, and it was overwhelmingly in favor of the acquisition. So it's going to be owned by an Australian, Australian bankers, I guess, and that's all we know. We really don't know what the impact of the acquisition is going to be. The articles that we've read say there won't be any change in management or anything happening short term. So I suppose that's good stabilizing news for Humanware there.
Absolutely. And then the other news today. Now, this one has been floating around on blogs, and Blind Confidential has been talking about it, and there's been a number of other people within the industry who have also been kind of wondering about this, about Freedom Scientific and whether or not an acquisition was imminent or what was going on there. And when I woke up this morning, I received an instant message from none other than Mr. Calvo, pointing me to an announcement from Wafra. This is the company who has acquired Freedom Scientific. And we actually have a statement from Freedom Scientific. This is actually available if you want to listen to the full announcement. This is only about a two-minute piece of this announcement. You can head on over to www.freedomscientific.com/fscast. And it's about a 15-minute presentation. Jonathan Mosen interviews Lee Hamilton, President and CEO of Freedom Scientific. And they talk about all kinds of things, from his career a little bit to direction for Freedom, and also about this acquisition with Wafra. So let's listen to that, and then we'll come back, and we'll give you the phone numbers, and we'll give you the way to contact us tonight so that you can participate in the show. But without further ado, let's listen to Jonathan Mosen interviewing Lee Hamilton all about this new acquisition from Wafra.
The blindness blogs right now are full of the story that Freedom Scientific has been acquired, has been sold to Wafra Investment Advisory Group. Can you confirm if this is in fact the case and discuss what it might mean for customers?
Well, as you probably know, Freedom Scientific was formed in April 2000 by combining three companies, Henry Joyce, Blazy Engineering, and Arkenstone. The money to fund that transaction came from an investor group. And as with all investors, they invested their money with the expectation that they would later sell their shares in Freedom Scientific. Wafra Partners is the newest investor in Freedom Scientific. They're a large U.S. private equity firm. They specialize in companies like Freedom Scientific that have a leadership position in their market. They're excited about the opportunity. They've done a lot of due diligence and investigation in this industry and understanding our strategy. And they're investing because they believe Freedom is on the right path.
Okay, so I'm a customer, I'm a JAWS user, I'm a PacMate user, whatever it might be. What kind of changes can I expect as a result of this acquisition?
Well, really, no changes. There will be no management or employee changes. The company will continue to operate from its existing locations. One of the reasons that Wafra invested is because they saw Freedom had a strong, experienced team, and they want to preserve that. Wafra only makes a return on their investment if the business grows, so they want us to continue investing to grow the business.
And as we look to the future, I guess you can't give too much away, but can you comment on what the future of assistive technology might look like?
Well, it's hard to comment without giving away our future plans, but I can say that Freedom is on a sound financial footing. We have the resources to develop and support the increasingly complex products that our customers are asking for, and that's what we're going to do. We've been successful because we listen to our customers and deliver the products they want and then provide excellent customer service after the sale. And we aren't planning to change that recipe.
You're listening to Main Menu Live, airing at 2 hours Universal on Wednesday. To participate in the show, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
So according to Freedom Scientific, it looks like nothing really is going to change. And I wanted to just state here that we've been monitoring a lot of the mailing lists and things like that. And talking about, there's been a lot of people talking about this acquisition. And I think we all just need to sit back and relax and just wait and see what may come. It looks as though really there won't be any significant change in anything that we will see. Due to the acquisition, which is fantastic. So, but time will tell. All right, let's bring on Daryl and Mike. Hey guys.
Well, hello there, and wow, Mike, thanks for coming on the show and talking with us about all your innovative technology.
Let's give the contact information, and then we'll let you guys take off, and we're going to let Daryl kind of drive the ship tonight, and I'll come in when we have callers and questions from MSN. If you'd like to get a hold of the show tonight, the number is 866-400-JEFF, 866-400-5333. Or if you'd like to use MSN tonight and communicate with us that way via the show, then you can do that by sending an instant message to mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. Hey, take it away, you two.
Okay. Hey, Mike, so could you give us a little bit of an overview, kind of a history of how you got Saratech off the ground and so forth there?
Well, Saratech was originally founded in 2000 as Saratech, and we started really with the Freedom Box Network, which was our product at the time, and our vision at that time was kind of an AOL for the blind type of thing. We did that. We acquired some users. We had a very simplified user interface. But as we started acquiring more and more users, and really Matt and I got to know each other as kind of a development team, I don't write a line of code. I'm kind of the interface part of the team, the idea guy, the guy who goes to Matt and says, "Hey, man, I got this kooky idea, and can you make this happen?" And Matt says, "Well, yeah." You know, and sometimes he says, "No, you're nuts," and we have to argue about it for a couple of months, and then finally, you know, we come to a center point of agreement. But so as Matt and I started growing together as friends and as employee and employer and that kind of thing, and really realizing each other's strengths, we started rolling out different products. And as you may remember, the first thing we really did that was kind of cool was we put the Freedom Box Network at the time, which was the largest collection of content available to the blindness community under one roof that was accessible, along with email and chat and instant messaging and all that stuff. We put it all on a little key, on a little memory stick, and this was back in 2004, I'm sorry. And in 2004, we put that out, and close to the end of 2004, Matt and I had this crazy idea about, well, what if we put together a little system that was not quite a screen reader, but did some of the stuff that screen readers did, because as our users would work with the web, they would have to install ActiveX controls and things like that. So we started this product called System Access. And System Access, as most of you may know now, really does give a lot of the mainstream quote-unquote screen reader technology or real screen readers a run for their money in the way that they perform. And the reason we still insist on not calling System Access a screen reader is because we think that screen readers is a passé term. System Access really is just that. It's access to your computer system, and really that computer system can consist of any amount of devices. Right now we're on the Windows platform, on the Windows desktop platform, but even the Windows operating system is finding its way onto new and interesting things, and you know, who knows, you may see us one day on the Xbox or other types of devices. So System Access is probably the best way that we've found, and we, in System Access's evolution from being able to go on a key, which has gone through a couple of generation changes throughout the years, and now we're on the U3 standard, and if some of you have seen the articles from Microsoft and M-Systems and SanDisk, U3 is going to die in a couple of years, and it's going to be replaced by something else, and we're going to be on that platform too. So it's just keeping up with the technology and really trying to make sure that we as a company don't fall behind. Being blind myself, it really concerned me before I got into this industry, how we were always a step or two behind the mainstream, and I don't believe that that's the case, and we're certainly not the only company doing that. There's other companies out there like GW Micro that are doing an excellent job at keeping up with what's going on, and even companies that come a little late to the party like Freedom are doing their part. So it's certainly a lot better than we were doing, you know, another 5-10 years ago. But onto what we're doing, another thing that we added into System Access was a way for people to remotely control their home computer. That this is something that we just did. It started back in the browser where you could stream audio from your home computer and up and download files from your home computer wherever you were through the browser. And then it just kind of grew. And we said, man, I wonder if we could do that with the desktop, and I wonder if we could do that with software on the other side. And it just kept kind of growing and pushing that envelope. And eventually what we came out with was something called remote training and support. And remote training and support is a way for a Freedom Box Network user to take System Access and connect to another Freedom Box Network user. And this is included in their product. And be able to assist them. Well, we started getting calls from the AT community and from the IT community saying, hey, man, that's not fair. You know, this is a consumer product, and it really has some ramifications for us as AT and IT professionals. You need to break this out into a regular product, a standalone product. So in trying to be responsive to the requests of our consumers, we've done that. And from that, and no laughing please, or at least not too loudly, RIM and RAM were born. RIM stands for Remote Incident Manager, and RAM stands for Remote Access Manager. And RUM is what we have a lot of when we get a lot of bugs and we have to work it out. But actually, none of us drink. But anyway, so we've got RIM and RAM, and basically what you demonstrated tonight, Daryl, was RIM. And Remote Incident is based for a technician that has multiple customers in multiple locations, or a training facility that has graduates, for example, like a school or a training program that has multiple, you know, hundreds if not thousands of graduates or people that they need to deploy a package out to, but they don't see these people all the time. They're not constantly upgrading their systems like you would be doing on a corporate LAN or something. They just, from time to time, this person has a problem, and instead of, you know, somebody schlepping the way over to their house or taking, you know, paratransit or whatever, or however people get around, and especially that a lot of our technicians are blind, so they face the same transportation challenges, they disconnect. And if the person has an adaptive technology installed, Karen's computer was talking to you with JAWS through your computer, we can hear it. If they've got Window Eyes, we can hear it. If they've got HAL, we can hear it. If they've got Kurzweil 1000 or 3000, we can hear it. And that's really important for a blind technician on the other side, like yourself, Daryl, to be able to be fixing the machine. And as you so eloquently stated, the beauty of this is that we didn't build the system for blind folks. We built the system the same level of quality that you would have in a remote management product for the mainstream, but we included accessibility as an important component from the day we started in this product. So it was really a universal design effort. Darryl, I'll shut up now and let you ask questions.
Well, Daryl, one of the things, and sorry for interjecting here, but one of the things that I found to be really interesting was when Daryl rebooted Karen's computer, and
yes, reboot and connect.
Yeah, and yeah. That was pretty cool. You know that
it's really impressive.
Yeah, that you would actually be able to see that. You know that it actually came up, and that you know that you were actually there even before login. So yeah, pretty cool stuff.
Well, yeah, the network services, you know, from a technical perspective, are available right there at the login screen. And really what we, you know, Serotech, and as you watch us grow in the next couple of years, I think the thing that differentiates us, Jeff, is that we are trying to be on that network level. And by being able to be kind of decentralized and mixing what goes on our servers with what goes on the box, on the local box, and what goes on in yours, we're able to connect you together. We're always sitting in the background, and we're really just there waiting to be called by the operating system or by the user to be able to transmit the information. And that's why what we're doing is basically transmitting the information from that secure, you know, from the secure area. And it's even down to the point where the remote operator can type in an account name and a password. We can't see the password that you're typing because we don't touch it. We don't touch the keyboard at that point. But we could enter it. So remote maintenance of a computer, full remote maintenance where you tell the customer to just walk away, don't worry about it, is totally possible.
That's just absolutely amazing. And I was impressed with certainly how smoothly I was able to demonstrate the technology on the first use, and
yes, you had no training.
Yeah, I had no official training from Serotech. Yeah, and Mike writes me after he listens to the podcast. He said, "Well, you know, I think there were like 2 points, you know, that I didn't quite get right, you know, but he's like, man, you did really well considering."
Oh, and I was freaking out though because it was really one of these things where, you know, the first impression is always so important. And Daryl, of course, you can hear the excitement, And Karen, God bless her, man. This woman is the patience of a saint. He's like excited. Yeah, this is so cool. And she's
You could tell she was definitely the geek in the family.
My wife is like that too. Yeah, honey.
Yeah. I think we all have wives like that. Yes, dear. Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah,
mm-hmm,
you know, so I wrote and I said, man, I can't believe you did that so well, but you got to tell people, please, because he was kind of feeling around and figuring out how it worked, and then they were being real secretive about the keyword, and the keyword can be anything.
Yeah, I realize it doesn't matter.
It doesn't need to be a secret and all this other stuff, and it was just fun to watch how intuitive the interface was, that he just picked it up and was able to, you know, to turn off the visual thing, and that we do that, of course, to save bandwidth. And if you're accessing your home machine, you know, so you can have some privacy, so nobody's peeking over your shoulder at what you're doing, you know. So there's a lot of similarities between how we've been able to leverage this technology, and is it repackaging or rebundling of a Serotech technology? You betcha. I mean, I think that return on investment is real important. And for us, the more things we can pop this into and we can do cool things with it, I mean, you know, you don't just put sugar in one thing. It seems to be showing up in space and everything nowadays. So it's a very cool way of giving a blind person accessibility to another machine. Would you have a question for me, or do you want me to explain RAM and what the difference?
Okay, well, why don't we, I was just going to ask one more question about RIM first, and then, yes, let's go on to RAM, definitely. I got a number of inquiries from the podcast, and I hope that we get a lot more from tonight's show. This is just amazing technology. Especially how you could administer a sighted person's computer without need to install a screen reader. But there have been some questions about pricing of the technology, and I was wondering if you'd like to address some of those.
Well, right now, if you have any children, we accept children. You know, you can set them over. Or we actually are running a special this month where I have five, and I'll send you three. Keep those three for a while, and then we'll give you system access. I mean, RAM as well, and RIM.
Yeah, you may have to charge to take some kids.
If you want to pay money like everybody else, we're really trying to be as competitive as possible when it comes to our pricing. I admit, when we put the system out, we really did some research, and we said, you know, we don't want to shortchange ourselves, but we don't want to overprice the market either. And we looked at what the leaders in the market were doing, and we said, well, this is what the prices are, and at this point in time, it's $325 per month per technician. Now, that's still not bad. If you're billing yourself out at $70 or $80 an hour, that's still not too bad if you don't have to travel somewhere. And it's $4 a gallon for gas almost. I mean, you know, it certainly isn't a big deal, but we still want to make it even more accessible monetarily to people. So you're going to see some pricing from us that I really am not able to talk about just yet, simply because we're still working on it. But I'm sure that I'll let you know, Daryl, and you can shout it from the rooftops and
absolutely,
and let everybody know. But we expect. I would expect that I can say this, that the pricing of RIM will be under $200 a month by the time that we're done dropping the prices. And of course, those who have already invested in the technology, don't worry, we're going to give you some of your money back as well, because it's just a matter of when you come out of the gate with a product, and you know, it's generally been very easy to price a product for the blind. You just look at what the mainstream pays and you triple it, and that's it. You know, and we don't do that.
Mike, I had a question about that, about the price.
Yeah.
Now, there's certain pricing models within the industry, for example, with terminal services, where you can say, you can buy a site license, or you know, basically the equivalent of a site license, where you can put it on unlimited numbers of machines, and you pay one price and you're done. Is that a pricing model that you have considered doing for this? You know, where someone could pay, you know, $3,000 and be over with it.
Right. Well, for RIM, RIM is one of those things where you pay for a technician. There's three parts to the system for both RIM and RAM. There's the host, that's the person being connected to. There's the client, which is the technician doing the connecting. And then there's the host, I have the server, which is the traffic cop, who, you know, makes sure that everybody is all properly licensed and that if you need to get through firewalls and all that stuff, and sets the policy. And right now, for RIM, it's a hosted service, which means it's on our servers, and all you're paying for is your seat as a client. Your host installation, you have an unlimited number of, so if you have 5,000 customers out in the field or 5 customers out in the field, you're going to pay the same amount of money. RAM, on the other hand, is not hosted on our servers. It's hosted within a corporate infrastructure. And an enterprise's wide area or local area network, and it is built for a one-time buyout of the server and then a per-seat charge for the remote access manager host. And they provide quite a bit more flexibility than even Remote Incident does. And frankly, the flexibility that they provide would not be something that an incidental technician doing support would actually use. Things like the ability to log into a desktop computer without the actual person being there. Support for Windows 2003 server and Longhorn server with unattended support and login as well. But different than Remote Desktop because it's actually interactive. So there's a couple of different pricing models, and we could talk for 15, 20 minutes just about the pricing, but we do try and really match what's out there. And again, we're not perfect. We're readjusting the pricing on RIM right now because it's just too rich for some people. Yeah. And we really want, we don't want to be a stopping point for somebody. We don't want it to be a major life decision. Should I eat or pay for RIM? You know, and that's really why we price our technology the way we do, and we try and go with subscription models as much as we can because, of course, it's always better to rent software than it is to buy it.
I wanted to ask you because unfortunately I did not as I thought I would get the chance to. I'm hoping to in the next coming. A couple of days, though, demonstrate this with a sighted computer user without a screen reader. But do you have any a story or testimonial that you can give about that? Because I think it's important for all of our listeners to understand that this technology would allow a blind person to gain access to a sighted person's computer who doesn't know anything about assistive technology or doesn't care about it. They just want their problem fixed, and I think that's the revolutionary part.
I think it's funny because how many times have we as blind people been the only computer expert in the house with a bunch of sighties and all of a sudden you're trying to tell them how to do it. They're using the mouse and they're clicking here and clicking there and you're used to using your keyboard shortcuts, man. You know how to do it, but you can't tell them what to do this or even the layout of a web page is different for us than the way that the various adaptive technologies render these web pages. Stuff that should be on the right is on the left, and that's not a knock. That's just the way that's just the way that it is. So in this particular case, I got a call from a family member who said, "Hey, Mikey, I got a computer problem." And this person was in New York, and I said, "Well, you know, normally we go back and forth, and I try and make them understand, and they're a little bit older than I am, so there's a bit of a language barrier and stuff." I said, "You know, let's just try it this way. I'm going to send you an email, and we're going to just click on a little link in the email, and you're going to follow instructions." And you know what's funny? He said, "Oh, my cable company does that." I said, well, that's what I'm going to do now. And, you know, they clicked on the link, installed the package, and I went in there, and in 5 minutes I fixed the problem that they had. It was with a pop-up blocker that they wanted to to activate in IE, and that somehow it had gotten deactivated. And, you know, it was just something that was so simple that would have taken me quite some time to make them understand how to do that. And at no time did they, you know, did they feel that they were working with a blind person, or did they have to make any accommodation for me. We didn't change the look of their screen. We didn't change the way that the machine worked at all. And when I was done, I said, well, you can erase the software that I just put in there, or for the next time you have a problem, which you will, you can just call me, and I'll jump on your machine again and fix it. Otherwise, it'll just sit there in your tray and it'll do nothing. And the RIM host is a totally passive application. It does nothing unless a keyword is put into it, and it then connects to our network and looks for the same keyword entered from a technician. If it doesn't find it, then it's just over. It doesn't work. So it's a very, very much a lock and key scenario where it's not like we've got a piece of spyware sitting on your computer that, you know, taking all kinds of information is going to feed it to us when we connect to your computer to fix it.
Yes, it does not listen. Is that correct? It only makes outbound connections. It doesn't listen.
It does not listen. It makes outbound connections when you initiate them.
Right.
It does go looking, and it does go looking about every so often for updates for itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that just makes sense. I mean, you've got a lot of things on your computer right this very second, poking around on the internet looking for updates. You know, and that's quite a common occurrence. People ask, well, can you get into my computer? Well, I think the question is, can we or will we? We won't, you know, but any company that you deal with, including Microsoft and everybody else, can if they had a mind to. I mean, you're on the internet, folks, so there's no such thing. And if anybody tells you that they can't get into your computer, run the other way. They're lying.
Yep.
And we just don't. We've never done it. We have no interest in what you do except for to provide you services.
Mike and Daryl, we have a caller. Let's bring the caller in. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hello, this is Richard Costa. Hi, Mike. How are you doing tonight? I was just curious about the RAM. You didn't mention the price for that, and I was just wondering, can you have that on a key like the system access so that you can, you know, you can remotely?
Yeah. RAM. I don't discuss prices publicly about RAM because it is custom built for corporations. You know, the minimum investments for RAM are over $15,000 for a server package. So it's not a consumer accessible.
So in other words, RAM really isn't for an individual person.
No, RAM,
it's still more
like
on corporate type mentality.
Right. That's right.
RAM is made for an individual, and yes, it can be run on a key to freedom. So a technician that's running RIM on a key to freedom can actually plug in anywhere and have access and be able to provide support. And if you have Skype on your U3 key to freedom, you can also just remotely connect to somebody with Skype and just plug in and have your whole little workshop wherever you are. Do it all the time.
Okay, Richard, is that it?
Yeah, that's it. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. 866.
Thanks,
yep. 866-400-5333. 866-400 Jeff, or mainmenu@acbradio.org if you want to participate in the show tonight.
All right. Wow. Okay. So, do we have any? Are we getting anything on MSN, Jeff?
Well, we had a question about training, and I know that. Mike, you guys are offering some training packages for Saratech products, and there was some question about that in reference to what the pricing was for training materials and such things as that.
That's very interesting. We're about to launch our training packages. We announced we announced the availability, and we've been finalizing. We had some minor delays with our packages from DeWitt and Associates, but we're right at the point of being able to finally get those out to the public. And you know, I know that this is going to sound very weird, but we're going to give our training materials away.
Really?
Wow!
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
We're going to give them away, and the place, and the people say, well, where are you going to make money? Well, this is where you're going to make money. If you want to become a certified Cerotech training facility where we push business to you, where we say, hey, you know, so-and-so has been tested by us, and we find them certifiable that they are a training facility for our product, and we've been and we've seen their program, and we've seen their graduates, and it's all good, then that's great. But again, there are a lot of people out there that can pick up these training materials, and especially with the DeWitt method of teaching, the books were written by a gal named Dina Shamilla, who is just an excellent trainer, and she's going to be running our certification programs, I think, in the future, and working with different centers that want to be doing this. But really, it's going to be quite exciting, because you're going to be able to just go to our training folks and say, I want that, and we're going to give you Braille-ready files, we're going to give you Word files, we're going to give you all the teacher workbook, the student workbook, and all of the worksheets, the Excel spreadsheets that you need for working with Excel, the, you know, test emails, the Word docs, all of that stuff, absolutely free for your organization, because we really believe that, you know, we want people to not, for cost, not to be a barrier, and we're going to make our money. I mean, we believe we've done a lot of studying on this particular thing, and realized that going the free route for giving these materials away is probably the best way of getting our name out there very quickly and getting folks to adopt the methodology.
Mike, I had a question concerning both RIM and RAM, and I'm not sure where it kind of falls, but I'll ask it, and then you can answer it however you wish. It probably falls into both camps, but one of the concerns that I have in reference to not just RIM and RAM, but any technology that's utilized, you know, that you're using for remote access, is security. And how secure is it? And for, you know, I mean, today, this day and age, everybody is definitely very much up on security, or at least they better be.
Exactly.
And I was just wondering how both RIM and RAM fall into this in reference to, is it a secure client? Is it certified as being a secure client? You know, in other words, would it be safe to be used, for example, you know, like in the Social Security Administration or in the Department of Education or the FBI or anything,
great,
you know, you know, something like that. You know, because that might be an issue where a blind person comes in and their IT guy goes, hey, you know, I don't know if that thing is secure or not. So I'm just wondering if that's something that's come up or you know, what you might have an answer to that.
Okay. I think that's a great question. And the first thing that I want to define is the term security when it comes to software. I think that, unfortunately, security, and there are people that build their entire businesses on, quote-unquote, making our computers secure and blocking vulnerabilities and things like that. There is security, meaning, you know, is your software, is its integrity good? Does it have holes in it that can be exploited by a third party or whatever? Or on the other side, security, is your software malware? Is it picking up information that it shouldn't be? Is it keeping track of usage statistics and sending them back to the server? You know, and for me, I tell people that the first thing about a good programmer and a hacker is really just integrity. I mean, the difference between a cop, a good cop, and a criminal, you know, is which side of the law they're on. And it's the same thing here. I mean, we are, I can tell you all the certifications, we're HIPAA compliant. Yes, we are running in secure areas. The state of Florida just deployed it on over 400 units at the Department of Education's Division of Blind Services. It went through a third-party security audit. It passed with flying colors. We used 128-bit encryption and all that stuff. But should we decide to become the evil lording emperors of the blindness industry and take people's information, I mean, that's something that any company with that amount of power can do. So security goes both ways. I mean, it depends on integrity of the company. And we, as I stated before, we have no interest in doing that. Security, I mean, when you write a package out there with the millions of lines of code that go into something like Windows or even other packages that have been found to have vulnerabilities like Office, I mean, that there's a big difference between what that's doing and what a piece of malware that's being malicious in your machine and your secure solution like your firewall or whatever is protecting against. And as a matter of fact, of the information that's being passed back and forth between the server, the client, and the host, all of that has 128-bit encryption. We've considered 256-bit encryption. At this point, we haven't implemented it because it kind of will slows the connection down even more, and it really just isn't necessary. I have yet to find anybody that's broken 128-bit encryption. And if you have you heard of anybody?
No, and I don't. Not that I'm aware. So, but then again, I don't.
The 256-bit encryption to me just sounds like one of those smoke and mirror things that they do to say, look, the new and improved version.
Yeah, exactly. We have another caller. Let's bring the caller in. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hey, guys. This is Matt Campbell from Serotech, and I just wanted
to... Oh, kick him off!
What?
No.
I just wanted to jump in to maybe provide a few more technical details in regard to the security question.
Okay.
I think one thing which bears mentioning... Mike mentioned that we do 128-bit encryption on all communication between the client and the host. Now, that encryption is end-to-end between the client and the host, which means that the client encrypts the data. It goes through our server, which basically plays traffic cop and relays the data, and then it's decrypted on the host. So our server can't even decrypt the data. So you can be sure that when you connect to one of your users and enter passwords and whatnot, that we won't be able to spy on it.
That's really important. So the data that you're dealing with on your machine, you can't take and do something with. For example, if you're opening up sensitive spreadsheets or anything like that, you're not going to be able to, not that you ever would, but make a record of that and keep it on your server or something like that.
That's correct.
I mean, it's not even possible.
As far as our server is concerned, the data going between the client and the host is just an undecipherable stream of bytes.
Okay, great.
The other thing to note is that in no circumstance does a network administrator or user have to open any ports in a firewall or set up any port forwarding in a router on the host machine. We go through firewalls. We've even gotten through quite restrictive firewalls at places like the Veterans Administration, right, Mike?
Oh yeah, you should see it. It's one of those darned if you do and darned if you don't scenarios where you're like so proud of your technology. Look at what it does, and all the geeks sit there going, "Now, how did you do that?
How did you do that?
Right. So should I say,
Mike?
Well, no, don't tell them the secret. But the point, it all comes back down to what I said before. Matt is one heck of a programmer, guys, and the difference between should Matt decide to become an evil programmer one day, he'll become, the world's most beastly hacker.
And the difference is that
what do you do with your gun? Do you shoot people or do you protect them? And that's the thing here is that he stays awake at night looking for ways to break through firewalls so that we can provide people good service.
Well, I think the thing to remember here, Mike, is to look back at the history of Serotech and look at, where you guys started from and where you're at now, considering the fact that it's Matt. For the most part, I mean, you had some work with your former product, the Freedom Box,
you know, which is still, of course, you know, live and well. But, I mean, you know, for you guys to have done what you have done, in the amount of time that you've done it in is, you know, just, miraculous.
About 7 years?
It's actually been six, and we're going on six, and I think it's a miracle. When you look at the amount of work that Matt and I have pushed out in the last 5 years as a team, you definitely know that there's a higher power. And, because really, some of the inspiration and some of the stuff that we've been able to come up with, and just some of the kooky ideas that we've been able to bring to life and make happen. And there's more kooky ideas to come. You know, I mean, we're not done.
Well, that's a great segue, because one of the next questions that I had, because we just have about 5 or 6 minutes left here, is, you know, we always have to ask this when, you know, AT companies come on, and that is, what is the future for, you know, both system access and RIM and RAM? And I mean, obviously RIM and RAM are pretty new products, so maybe this question is even more geared toward system access. What might people expect to be seeing in the future, that you might be able to talk about anyway, for system access? And, you know, where are you heading? And can you give us a peek?
We love the web. We love the web. We've always loved the web. And we think that, like many companies do, that the web is tomorrow's operating system. I think that the way you access your information is going to become ubiquitous soon, and we intend to be there at every level of the game. Web 2.0 is certainly a strategy that we're looking at. We're embracing technologies like Silverlight and Ajax and things of that nature to strengthen our future products, to narrow the digital divide, to bring people closer together, to help share information. We want to really touch on the Freedom Box Network, wants to go more into the social networking aspects of things, kind of what you get with a Flickr or with a MySpace, but with a little bit more of a us-oriented mindset. I mean, social networking is so huge. We really have a heart for kids. We want to do things for kids and getting them to be able to adopt the computer as early as possible, and not just in a resource classroom, but all over the place. We envision a day where you can walk up to a computer, and through whether it be through your key or various other processes, you can have your accessibility anywhere. And that's why that's really our company motto, is providing accessibility anywhere. And as I think, as you see, we're going forward, and what we're going to be rolling out in the very near future, that we're really committed to that. From system access standpoint, we've got three things that are on the agenda for this year, and they will be completed by the end of this year. At this point, I'm not real confident on the order, because it's just it changes weekly as to where we're going with what, and that is, you're going to see Java access. So access to Java applications.
Without requiring the Sun Java Access Bridge to be installed.
Matt, could you tell us how you're doing that? No, I'm kidding.
We have to kill you. Like,
yeah.
I'm not even sure of
the specifics yet.
No. That was just more of a joke than anything else.
But the other two things that we're going to be rolling out is Braille, and that's going to be demonstrable in a demonstrable state by the conferences this summer. And then last but certainly not least, one of the most powerful things that I think that's going to really revolutionize the industry is our scripting language, Scriptsure, which is going to allow not only the conversion of other scripting languages to ours through tools that are going to be developed by the community itself, but also the ability to use multiple scripting languages within our scripting, on our scripting platform, and just by leveraging our packaging system to be able to deliver those, to be able to update the way that people receive scripts within a matter of seconds. I mean, imagine, you know, being a scripter and being able to deploy out your script to one or hundreds of thousands of people in just within, by uploading it to one server, and the moment that they run that application, bingo, it's there. And they've got the new scripts. How many places right now in this country aren't reinventing the wheel over and over and over again because they're not aware that some guy across the country is doing the same kind of scripting?
You mentioned Silverlight. And without getting too technical...
Yeah, you got that, huh?
without getting too technical here, I'm kind of glad you called, Matt. let's toss it over to Matt. And Matt, if you can give... and I know
be
this...
careful, Matt. He's a tricky one, this Jeff.
No, I'm not.
No.
You know, I mean, I could describe it, but it would probably take me a little bit longer. I don't know. We'll see here. Matt, can you tell us... What is Silverlight and how will that really kind of impact your product or at least to the point that you can talk about?
Well, Silverlight is a cross-platform, cross-browser plugin for IE and Mozilla Firefox on Windows and Mac for developing rich web applications. That is, you know, websites and web applications that look more like desktop, you know, that look and feel more like desktop apps. So, you know, they have a more desktop-like user interface. One of the things that Microsoft is also pushing with Silverlight is playback of high-definition video. You hear about sites like Major League Baseball rolling out a new video player for their games based on Silverlight. Basically, a way to make websites and web apps a lot cooler, more functional, more responsive, just all around more appealing. And it's this isn't going to be in Silverlight 1.0, which is coming out this summer, if I remember correctly. But Silverlight 1.1, a little further down the road, is going to be based on Microsoft.net. So it gives programmers a lot more flexibility in what languages they can develop their rich web apps in. And one of the components of this is Microsoft's new dynamic language runtime, which more seamlessly integrates scripting languages like JavaScript, Visual Basic scripting, and even open source languages like Python and Ruby into .NET. And so we are going to leverage this new technology, wherever it serves us well, and make sure, of course, that websites and applications built using Silverlight are accessible.
Wow, that's pretty incredible. And I know when I heard about the 1.1 version coming out and saw that, you know, you were going to be able to use, you know, languages like Ruby and Python and VBScript.
And I'm a real Python head. I won't try to hide that.
Yeah, well,
hey,
exactly.
How do you deal with the indentations in Python, Matt?
Well, I'm partially sighted, so that's not really an issue for me. I don't remember if I left this in System Access, but at least in an early version of System Access, we would actually announce the indentation changes in an edit in edit controls. I might have to bring that back if I cut it at some point. But
oh, that would be cool, definitely.
Yeah, that was actually discussed.
We're working closely with Microsoft, to bring this platform into the blindness community. We're very excited. We've shared with them some of our plans for it and kind of gotten their thumbs up and their pats on the back. And, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. But it's certainly not something you're going to be seeing tomorrow. I mean, you know, these are all platforms that are, the program I like to listen to a lot says, these are into tomorrow, you know. And really, that's what we're about at Serotech. Sero means connected. Tech means technology. So we're trying to keep people connected and through our connected technologies. And really, as you go forward, you're going to see that we're going to be there at every step along your digital road and to give you the ability to live that digital life that you so much crave and that everybody in the mainstream is living.
Yeah, when you're definitely on the bleeding edge right now, because, I mean, these are even alpha
and beta products that are being talked about here in reference to Silverlight and the new programming models that are coming out. So you guys continue to innovate, and even, you know, where other companies are just innovating themselves, meaning Microsoft. So that's really, really great. Mike, we want to give you an opportunity to give some contact information for everybody. We're just about out of time.
Sure. If you're interested in Remote Access Manager for your organization or Remote Incident Manager for your individual needs or for your organization as well, we do have a privatized enterprise version of RIM available as well. You can write to us at rim.ram@cerotech.com. Cerotech is spelled Cerotech. And you can use our bright, new, shiny Cerotech.com URL to visit our website at www.cerotech.com. And you can read all about our products for enterprise, our products for education, our products for home use, our products for the workplace. And do stick around and sign up for our newsletter there and continue. You're going to get, you know, information. We're not going to bombard you with information about what's going on at the company or what we're doing personally. We're just going to basically let you know what's happening that's going to change your life and what you really want to know about. So
that's
please
awesome.
Do come by www.cerotech.com or give us a call at 866-202-0520. That's 866-202-0520. And when you visit our website, please do look at our reseller section and make sure that you may just have a reseller right close by. You never know.
That's and great. Don't forget about our RIM and RAM white papers.
There you go.
I wrote those myself.
All right.
Yeah, they're right on the front page.
Okay. Well, Matt, Mike, and, of course, Daryl, we want to thank all of you for being here tonight. We're just about out of time, and I wanted to let everybody know next week we're going to be hearing the final presentation from Rick Harmon all about JAWS for Windows 8.0 Public Beta 2 running under Windows Vista. And then the crew comes back. That's right. Randy Knapp, Don Barrett, myself, and Daryl, as well as Rick Harmon, will be joining us. And you'll be able to call in and ask our panel of experts any technical questions that you may have. We'll be focusing on Vista as well as a number of other products. So that's what's coming up next week on Main Menu and Main Menu Live. We'll see y'all next week. Have a wonderful, wonderful week.
If you would like to contact the Main Menu production team or panel of experts heard this evening on Main Menu Live, then simply send an email to mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. If you have suggestions for topics or you have questions that you would like to have addressed on a future edition of Main Menu Live, then email us and we'll do what we can to answer them or cover your suggested topics on a future Main Menu Live. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week on ACB Radio Mainstream for another Main Menu Live.